17th afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Good afternoon, Carla. Could you please call the roll?
Good afternoon. Fish?
Here.
Hardesty?
Here.
Udalee?
Here.
Fritz Wheeler?
Here. Now we will hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. If it does not, you may be ruled out of order. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you're in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do so. Please, with a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Please remain seated in council chambers unless entering or exiting. If you are filming the proceedings, please do not use bright lights or disrupt the meeting. Disruptive conduct such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you very much, and it was read with feeling and aplomb. Thank you. Carla, could you read our one item for this afternoon, which is a proclamation?
Yes. Item 344, proclaim April 2019 to be Fair Housing Month.
Colleagues, Portland, like many other cities around the nation, has a history of racial discrimination in housing. While some of these discriminatory practices have taken place in private transactions between individual landlords and renters, others have had the support of government and public institutions in the form of FHA racial restrictions, redlining, and racially restrictive covenants. During the first half of the 20th century, as cities shifted increasingly towards more single-family housing, Portland made changes to the city code that rezoned many predominantly multifamily neighborhoods exclusively for single-family housing. This rezoning that gave rise to Portland's iconic housing style was in fact an exclusionary policy that benefited single-family homeowners, who are almost exclusively white, at the expense of all other racial groups. Combined with the deliberate exclusion of African Americans in particular, the enduring legacy of that rezoning is racial and economic segregation that persists in our neighborhoods even to this day, and racial disparities across all measures of opportunity and well-being, including but not limited to housing. While the Fair Housing Act established the responsibility of government to protect people from housing discrimination, simply responding to discrimination is not enough to overcome these real disparities. What these lessons from the past also teach us is that the fundamental role that we all play in reshaping our communities. The Housing Bureau works to further fair housing in our community through annual fair housing testing, legal services, renter protection policies, and affirmative fair housing marketing. But barriers to housing and neighborhood choice include a broad spectrum of social attitudes and policies that are not limited to housing alone. These are barriers such as a lack of access to public transportation, a lack of access to living wage jobs, or historic zoning that has caused a lack of affordable housing choices. other bureaus are now exploring their roles in addressing these issues as well. The Bureau of Development Services, for example, is updating the city's landlord training to include new tenant protections and healthy housing. And the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability has put racial equity at the forefront of housing planning efforts in the Southwest Corridor and zoning of multifamily housing throughout the city. And we can continue to do more to ensure that we are shaping inclusive and equitable communities all throughout Portland. I ask all bureaus to consider how their policies and practices may be contributing to the barriers of housing choice. With every decision, we must ask ourselves and our staff, who's impacted? How are they impacted? How are the benefits get distributed? How will we engage those who are impacted? And what are the steps that we are taking to mitigate those impacts today? What we can learn from the past is that even seemingly neutral policies and decisions can cause as much lasting damage as those intended to cause harm. If we don't actively approach our work with the intention to prevent and undo harm, discrimination and injustice will persist. Discrimination in housing, regardless of intent, has no place in our city, and it begins with each of us. I'd like to take this opportunity to offer my colleagues to offer opening statements as well. Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Mayor. Welcome, everyone. It's lovely to be here with you again today. It feels like we were just celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. I can't say this often enough. Housing is a basic need, and it is a human right. I ran my campaign for this seat on a platform of tenant protections and affordable housing. Stabilizing tenants and increasing access to housing is one of the most vital contributions I can make from where I now sit. I've dedicated considerable staffing resources to addressing our housing crisis over the last 2 years, and most recently this work has resulted in our Fair Access in Rental proposal, or FAIR, which was presented to Council 2 weeks ago. I'm incredibly proud of the work my office has done on behalf of the nearly 50% of Portlanders who are renters. But today, I want to take a moment to recognize the ways in which the community has rallied their own resources and how moving it has been to work with some of the most passionate, brilliant advocates Portland has to offer. We often take for granted the work that organizations like Urban League, Community Alliance of Tenants, Southeast Works, Central City Concern, and so many more do every day to find creative solutions that get Portlanders into stable housing. Overcoming the stigmas of low wages, involvement in the justice system, houselessness are often exacerbated by other forms of discrimination based on race, citizenship status, and economic class. These organizations work tirelessly to assert the best interests of our community. Thank you to these organizations and many more who I did not mention today. Obviously, thank you also to Oregon Fair Housing for shouldering the burden that our unregulated housing market has created. I commit to continuing to step up and share that burden for as long as I am here, and chances are well beyond that. I'm incredibly grateful for the Fair Housing Act. It's provided us a solid foundation on which to build our fight against ongoing barriers, and it promotes the use of real data to dispel mythologies about who deserves to live in a stable home. I'm honored to celebrate the Fair Housing Act today and every day of the year. Thank you, and happy Fair Housing Month.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fish.
So I want to begin by saying that one of the highest callings of someone sitting on this side of the dais is to have the opportunity to work every day to remove barriers in our community. And we have lots of barriers. Some are visible, some are less visible. In fact, testing that we do has become harder because some of the barriers that people face are more subtle. less obvious than they were a generation ago. I always like to preface my remarks about fair housing by just acknowledging the person that in my life had the greatest impact on my passion for civil rights, and that was my dad, who was the principal sponsor of the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988, which for the first time put teeth into the act and also enforcement and brought families and children under the umbrella of protection. But that was done by brokering a deal with all the various groups that were concerned, including realtors and the civil rights community and the advocacy community. It was difficult work and it took a long time, but the Fair Housing Act amendments of 1988 have stood the test of time. So I just want to acknowledge that personal connection. I also want to say that when I was the housing commissioner, we heard loud and clear from the community that we needed to do more on fair housing testing and enforcement. And the truth is, the city had not done much. It had not been part of our regular systems. And we did some audit testing. History will record that it was a bumpy rollout. And we learned a lot. And we had our fair share of critics. And some of the loudest critics were people that for years had not been advocating for us to do anything around fair housing. So it was something that was surprising to some of us that some of our biggest critics were people that had contributed the least in the past. But nonetheless, we persevered. And now, over time, we have more confidence in our testing. And as the Fair Housing Council reminds us, testing is just a snapshot. It's not a scientific in the sense that you can't extrapolate too far. But it tells us and continues to tell us that we have work to do, that there are barriers that are set up to prevent people from being able to freely access housing of their choice. And why does that matter? Well, we can sling acronyms and we can cite the civil rights statutes and we can go through the history. But at the end of the day, why it matters is because we believe that families in our community should have the right to choose where they live. And by choosing where you live, you have the opportunity to access strong schools, parks, infrastructure, business districts, all the amenities that so many of us take for granted come with being able to choose where to raise your family. And if the deck is stacked and prevents people from exercising that choice, then we are in effect disenfranchising people for fully participating in some of the investments that we've made to make this a very livable community. And that is against our values. That's why this matters. That's why this work continues to matter. And I'm grateful that both the Housing Bureau and this mayor have continued to be dedicated to working on these hard issues of fair housing. So thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right, with that, I have a formal proclamation I'd like to read. The proclamation represents the values of the entire Portland City Council on this important day. Whereas the Fair Housing Act, enacted on April 11th, 1968, was adopted to prohibit discriminatory housing practices, undo racial segregation patterns, and provide equal access to housing opportunity for all. And whereas, in Portland, the combined federal, state, and local civil rights laws protect the people from housing discrimination based on race, color, national origin, religion, gender, family status, disability, marital status, sexual orientation, source of income, military status, gender identity, ethnicity, or history of domestic violence, stalking, or sexual assault. And whereas, despite these legal protections, Portland has not yet succeeded in eliminating discriminatory housing practices, removing patterns of racial segregation, and providing equitable access to opportunity, as is evidenced by a racial homeownership gap. And whereas, Portland will only be successful in providing equal housing opportunity with the commitment, involvement, and support of all city bureaus, agencies, elected officials, and residents. And whereas, housing is essential to the quality of life and the success of all of its residents and is the foundation of health, household stability, access to education, and the ability to seek and retain employment. And whereas, Portland has a diverse population with a variety of housing needs, our city must provide the range of housing types related to size, location, tenure, and cost to support the diverse housing needs of our residents. And whereas we celebrate the passage of the Fair Housing Act, let us recommit ourselves to eliminating discrimination in housing by better understanding the barriers to housing choice, dedicated resources to meaningfully address disparities, adopting policies that support our community's most vulnerable residents, measuring the impacts of our efforts, and creating more housing that welcomes and celebrates people of all abilities, races, cultures, and incomes. Now, therefore, I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim April 2019 to be Fair Housing Month in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this month. And now we have the honor of hearing from a number of people from our community. First up will be Kim McCarty, Senior Renter Services Program Coordinator. And I don't know if Shannon is here today. Did Shannon make it?
She might be coming later, but she's not here.
Okay, very good. You're going to make some brief remarks, and then I understand you're going to introduce some of our guests, starting with Alan Lazo.
I'll have everybody come
good.
Up here. Christina.
Great, thank you. Welcome and thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm Kim McCarty, Senior Rental Services Program Coordinator at the Portland Housing Bureau for the Rental Services Office. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. As we celebrate the Fair Housing Act, we also want to celebrate communities that use the power of the Fair Housing Act to demand housing opportunity for everyone. Community includes collaboration with the Urban League, El Programa Hispano Catolica, and the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. As an example, their project funded by the Portland Housing Bureau is called the Housing Catalyst Collaboration. They've designed a culturally sensitive fair housing enforcement and education program to address housing discrimination experienced by renters of color. We look forward to sharing their impact next year. And today, we'll be hearing from community members working to shape inclusive and equitable communities through their participation in projects such as the Southwest Corridor Inclusion Communities Project, the Southwest Housing Equity Plan, the East Portland Action Plan, and the North Northeast Housing Strategy. We'll end the program by honoring our young artists that made the Fair Housing posters based on the theme, Everyone is welcome in my neighborhood, and then invite you to take some pictures with the artists. Our first set of speakers include Alan Lazo, Director of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, Christina Palacios, Housing Director at Unite Oregon, and Eric Engstrom, Principal Analyst at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Actually, before I wish you a happy Fair Housing Month, I feel compelled to note that April apparently is also Dame time, and so I'll give you a Go Blazers shout out also. So apparently important in April. So thank you for having us here this afternoon, and happy Fair Housing Month to all of you. I'm Alan Lazo, the Executive Director at the Fair Housing Council of Oregon. We're a private, nonprofit civil rights organization whose mission is to end housing discrimination and ensure equal access to housing in Oregon. Commissioner Daly, as you noted, we just celebrated, it seems yesterday, the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act. And one of the things that I've been struck by over the last year since we celebrated that milestone in fair housing is the many ways that the work of fair housing impacts the community around us. Among those, specifically, is the depth and the breadth of the impact of housing discrimination and segregation that the Fair Housing Act had intended to address more than 50 years ago now. In 1970, Trafficante versus Metropolitan Life Insurance became the first Fair Housing Act case before the Supreme Court. In that case, the owners of an apartment complex in San Francisco had discriminated against non-white rental applicants. But the case brought by was brought both by a black applicant, or a black plaintiff, an applicant in the apartment complex, as well as a white plaintiff living in the apartment complex, Paul Traficante. Traficante alleged that he too had suffered harm because he, number one, had lost the social benefits of living in an integrated community. Two, that he had missed business and professional advantages which would have accrued if they had lived with members of minority groups. And three, that he had suffered embarrassment and economic damage in social, business, and professional activities from being stigmatized as a resident of a segregated community. The decision then by the Supreme Court in agreeing with Traficante affirmed Congress's intent under the Fair Housing Act that even those who are not, quote, direct victims have standing to enforce the Fair Housing Act, for they, quote, for they too have suffered from segregation. All of this was consistent, the Supreme Court found, with the understanding, again, of the Act's congressional drafters, who knew that the harms of housing discrimination were many, again, that depth and breadth of the impact of housing discrimination. The Act's proponents at the time, as the Supreme Court noted, quote, emphasized that those who were not direct objects of discrimination had an interest in ensuring fair housing as they too suffered. The court went on to say that while it was the landlord who had been the one to perpetrate the discrimination, the plaintiff was not the only victim of discriminatory housing practices. It is, as Senator Javits said in supporting the bill, the whole community who suffers its impacts. So while the Traficante decision set an important legal standard about who is harmed by discrimination and subsequently has set the legal standard for standing in fair housing cases, it also, for me, confirms that not only are those who suffer the direct impact of discrimination harmed, but also the whole community is harmed. I would offer this notion also then imbues us the responsibility that an entire community has to end discrimination and create open and inclusive communities. Because we can see that when one individual suffers discrimination, then we all do. Conversely then, we can hold that not only one benefits from ending housing discrimination and ending segregation, but an entire community benefits from ending discrimination and ending segregation. In the end, this legal concept about who is harmed by discrimination and segregation confers upon all of us the moral obligation and the moral imperative, the depth and breadth of by which we must accept the responsibility to remedy the impacts of historical housing discrimination, segregation, and displacement. The call is made not only to our partners at the government, institutional, and systems-wide levels, it is made to all members of our community in every neighborhood in our city. And we're going to hear next from some of those groups who have answered this call to open and inclusive communities in the processes in which they are involved today in our communities. The depth and breadth of the promise of fair housing ultimately calls for all of us to dream and then make real the world the young artists that we will meet later have so adeptly illustrated in the Fair Housing Poster Contest. Those long ago acts of discrimination, those deeply segregated neighborhoods that gave rise to the original open housing movement of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. more than 50 years ago, and ultimately the Fair Housing Act 51 years ago that we celebrate today, call upon us all to work toward a world, as our young artists again here today will endear us with, where, quote, everyone is welcome in my neighborhood. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lazo.
Christina. Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the City Council. Thank you for having me today. My name is Christina Palacios. I work for Unite Oregon, our state housing director. And I'm here today to talk about our work in the Southwest Corridor, the Tiger area, and we're starting to work in Southwest Portland. We've been working with metro cities and affordable housing providers to make sure that there is an equitable fair outcome if or when the MAX line happens. Unite Oregon has been involved in the Southwest Corridor since 2017, and we started working in partnership with CAD, OPAL, Momentum Alliance, Community Partners for Affordable Housing, also known as CPAP, And our collective vision is to make sure that when there is new developments, that everyone that is going to be impacted by the projects has a chance to raise their voice and is listened to. We specifically want to lift up the voices of the community members that tend not to participate for the many reasons, as many of you know, people of color, people with disabilities, immigrants, refugees, renters, transit riders, youth, rural communities, etc. Since 2017, Unite Oregon organized many successful community meetings, and we had an attendance of 40 to 60 people at every meeting. They were all happening in the Tiger area, and we're going to be doing the same in the Southwest Corridor. We plan to do that in Clackamas. So we want to do everywhere. We want to make sure that the voices that I mentioned before that are not heard are heard loud and clear. After several meetings, our number has been increasing. We went from 60 to now 80 to 100 people at every meeting. And we'll be getting extra participants in on adult Southwest Corridor cohort, subcommittees and committees that we have. People just show up and say they want to be part of it. The information that we present at each encounter we had with the community has been in Spanish, English, Somali, and Arabic. When we see the extra participants at our events, what comes to our mind is one thing. Our communities want to say and want to be a part of what is happening in their communities. So thanks to the multilingual, multicultural spaces that we create, we were able to come up with a letter of request that I'm gonna be passing. This letter of request has many things that the community said they needed to stay in place. Some of those requests include fair housing rights, renters protections, community needs, walk size, and many things. They voted and they all approved this letter, and on their own they were able to collect 100 signatures to support the request. I hope you take the time to read those requests and take it very seriously. People, immigrants and refugees need to be heard, and I'm asking you today to hear them. So three of the requests that they had on this letter, I'm gonna mention today for public records, so you can see that when the community speaks, they're listened to. So when we started working, there was a proposal for the MAX line that was gonna go through Ash Avenue on Tiger. There was an apartment complex that housed 70 families. What the community said was simple: don't destroy anything. Construction before destruction. If you don't have a place to put us, do not destroy any of our housing. The response from the city of Tiger was they made a commitment not to destroy anything. So that was good. The community felt that they were listened to. Then on the letter, they wrote that their bus tickets were too high. They were taking 2 hours from, or they still do. They take about 2 hours to come from Hillsboro, Beaverton, Tiger, or Tualatin to work in the city of Portland or enjoy the amenities that we have, and they don't have. Such a things are sometimes community spaces where they can thrive, they can play, and they don't have them over there. So they're coming here, but they take too long, and they didn't have enough money to keep paying those high fares. With Opal was already working on lowering the fares, so this letter pushed elected officials to make it happen, and now they're taking advantage of low fares. And the last one that they demanded on this letter, it was to provide renters protections. They were telling us they were getting evicted and the renters were going up way too much, and they were afraid that if a new MAX line came through their area, they were gonna get displaced. So we encouraged them to not only write this letter, but to call their elected official and show up to Salem and ask for renters protections. We now have the most progressive renters protections in the nation. So I'm here today to ask you to keep supporting fair, affordable housing and protections for all in every aspect, and to fund Unite Oregon and our partners so we can do long-term sustainable fair housing for all. Thank you.
Thank you.
I can do the slides for you.
Thank you. The Bureau of Planning and Sustainability understands that historically zoning has been used as a tool of exclusion, and as the agency with custodianship over the zoning map and zoning code, we know that we have an obligation to look critically at our legacy zoning patterns and break down barriers to housing choice as we do our planning work. We have a policy toolbox that is in fairly good shape on this point. As you know, the Portland Plan in 2012 put forward the idea of an equity framework that drives everything we do as a central focus with an emphasis on race and disability. In 2015, our climate action plan was updated to have a more explicit focus on equity actions. And more recently, the comprehensive plan was overhauled and is one of the key implementation tools for this work because of how it drives how we manage growth and change. So for BPS, fair housing means reconsidering our practices and forming new community partners. We have policies, but we need to move towards more partnerships and changing our day-to-day practices. Next slide. As we consider new plans, we need to ask ourselves if the changes we're making are expanding housing choice or where they serve as a barrier. And the mayor asked some of those questions in your introduction. When we are considering single family zoning, what is that impact? Is that still appropriate? When we are upzoning an area, will the subsequent development cause displacement, such as the question in the Southwest Corridor? Are we treating different areas of the city differently as we do our work? The new comprehensive plan provides policies for doing this kind of analysis and asking these kind of questions. And of course, that work is not confined to BPS. Prosper Portland, PBOT, Housing Bureau are critical partners in that work. I mean, this slide is just a picture of one of the earliest citywide zoning maps with highlighting the areas that at the time were the first single family zones that existed in the city. And the map was actually a little bit the reverse of today's zoning map, which has a lot more of the single family zoning than it did then. Next slide. We know that community plans have different impacts on different communities. And the slide shows the Southwest Community Plan from 2001 and the 1993 Albina Community Plan. Since 2000, there have been, we're starting to approach a five-digit figure on the number of housing units built in the Albina Community Plan area, so approaching 10,000 housing units since 2000 in that area. And in Southwest Portland, it's probably almost less than half of that number of housing units have been built, and most of those housing units have been built in the immediate close-in South Portland neighborhood, not so much further afield in Southwest. So, arguably, the zoning pattern is having an effect on housing choice in Southwest Portland, which is an area with great schools and access to high-quality jobs. We have a new opportunity to look at that and are doing so with the Southwest Corridor Equitable Housing Strategy that you all adopted in the fall as a first step. One of the actions in it called for us to do further station area planning using a health equity and fair housing lens, and that's what we're doing with as we kick off the West Portland Town Center plan this year, and that's getting underway now. As we started to do our work in the Southwest Corridor, we looked at the history of redlining and the use of racial covenants in the corridor with help from the Fair Housing Council. Thank you. And we provided staff and our advisory group with an orientation to understand that history. And the last slide I have, actually not quite the last slide, next slide. The last slide I have just shows some from material from some of that those historical documents that we dug up for South Portland. And we hope that we're making more equitable decisions today, but as we do this, we need to remember that our zoning map looks the way it does today because of that very explicit racial bias that occurred at the time it was drawn up. And so it's in that spirit that we move forward and try to make a difference now.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Do you have any questions? Or we'll move on to our next set of speakers.
I think we're good to go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'd like to invite our next set of speakers, including Frida Christopher, John Mulvey, Dr. Stephen Holt, and Jillian Sarge-Felton.
Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you. Just a brief introduction. They will tell us about their work in East Portland Action Plan, the North Northeast Housing Strategy. Frieda Christopher is co-chair of the East Portland Action Plan Housing Committee and a David Douglas School Board member. John Mulvey is co-chair of the East Portland Action Plan Housing Committee. And Jillian Sarage is also serving on the North Northeast Housing Strategy Committee. Welcome.
Thank you.
We could start with John.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm John Mulvey, and I am a co-chair of EPAP's Housing Subcommittee. And I appreciate the opportunity to share with you some thoughts today on the Fair Housing Act at 51. In 1947, Langston Hughes wrote, "The moon belongs to everybody, but not this American earth of ours." He lived and wrote in a time not that long ago when housing discrimination was legal in America. It would take until 1968 before our country would act to ensure that all Americans could buy or rent the home of their choosing in the place of their choosing. That law, the Fair Housing Act, was forged in the blood of Martin Luther King. On the day that Dr. King was murdered, the Fair Housing Bill had been bottled up for months in the House Rules Committee, the place where controversial bills were sent to die. The bill also faced a filibuster in the Senate. In the days after his murder, riots erupted in more than 100 American cities. 75,000 U.S. soldiers and guardsmen patrolled America's streets. Here in Oregon, more than 700 people marched in Lake Oswego, 5,000 in Eugene. A silent vigil at Portland City Hall lasted 3 days and nights. Students walked out of classes at Jefferson High School, where school didn't resume for 6 days. The editors of the Portland Journal wrote about the unrest, but also said, quote, "Helpful now would be a convincing showing that Dr. King was right and that the majority of white Americans are sincere, if lethargic, advocates of racial justice." One of President Lyndon Johnson's aides recalled that Johnson had cornered him one day to urge him to keep working on the hopeless bill. The president, poking him in the shoulder with his finger to emphasize each word, said that he wanted the bill because until people live together, they'll never know that they have the same fears and ambitions and the same hopes for their children. As 150,000 mourners filed past Dr. King's body in the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, the House Rules Committee voted the Fair Housing Bill to the House floor. It would pass both chambers the next day and be signed by the president 6 days after the murder. Every member of Oregon's congressional delegation, 3 Democrats and 3 Republicans, voted in favor of the bill. But Senator Mark Hatfield presciently warned that legislation does not change hearts and minds, and a statute on the books does not end discrimination. So we're here today to honor the Fair Housing Act, enacted into law 51 years ago. But it's a bittersweet celebration when we know that, as Senator Hatfield warned, housing discrimination continues in our nation and here in our city. And it's a sad memorial when today our housing crisis appears so intractable. What would Langston Hughes say about Portland today, or Mark Hatfield, or Martin Luther King? They brought urgency, compassion, and a love of justice to the problems of their day. That's the legacy of the Fair Housing Act that I hope this council will celebrate and make real, not with proclamations, but with action. The problems of the past seemed intractable too, and their times were as challenging as any could be. Despite the obstacles, they took bold risks for what was right. I ask today's leadership to embrace that legacy and show the same courage to act boldly to ensure that every Portlander, now and in the future, has a decent and safe home.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Frida Christopher. I'm co-chair of East Portland Action Plan Housing Subcommittee and chair of the David Douglas School Board. I want to thank you for recognizing and proclaiming it Fair Housing Month. East Portland is home to many of our underrepresented and underserved communities who often are the recipients of housing discrimination. Though Portland has taken steps to reduce this discrimination, it has not been eliminated. Many of the projects that receive public funding are careful to fulfill those requirements in the Fair Housing Act, but the private sector is far from doing so. Thus, discrimination continues. I think we have some opportunities here with the implementation of the Portland Rental Registration Program and the new screening criteria that there is some potential out there to reduce housing discrimination that still occurs. I know with East Portland Action Plan, our housing subcommittee are looking at how can we help in our neighborhood. Unlike many neighborhoods who want to exclude people, we want to be all inclusive, and we want to keep people in East Portland and not have them displaced. Unfortunately, displacement is now occurring. Our East Portland schools are losing students, but most important, when you look at the data, it's those that are on free lunch, or they speak another language at home, or they're in our ESL program, or they're homeless. So as a committee, we are working and we try to work collaboratively with the Housing Bureau. We are also working as a committee on looking at something using a tool that's been used in the past, preference policies, as an anti-displacement tool. We're doing our research now on that and hope at some point to be talking with the Housing Bureau and bringing it to City Council. But the last step, I've been working a lot on this research, have met with many of the providers of affordable housing. We want something that is reasonable, easy to implement, and doesn't have unintended consequences. So the last step in our research is to meet with our community members who are those renters, those ones we are concerned about that are being displaced, because it's important that their voice is heard, not just from the agencies or nonprofits that represent them, but the actual people who are living in those rental units, so that we can truly understand how they will be impacted by any policy that made. I think that is what is missing often, is that their voice, their true voice, is missed when a policy is implemented and then some unintended consequence occurs. But I'm pleased to be here today and share what we're doing in East Portland. We believe in being collaborative with the city rather than adversarial. And so I hope we can continue to be so. And thank you again for allowing me to speak today.
Thank you, Frida. We appreciate it.
Mayor Wheeler, council members, thank you for inviting me as a member of and representing the North Northeast Housing Strategy Oversight Committee to the Fair Housing Month proclamation. I first want to invite all of you to join us on the second Thursday of the odd numbered months for the North Northeast Housing Oversight Committee and come see what the work is that we're doing there. We welcome all of you. My name is Jillian Siraj Felton. I'm the Director of Housing Development at Community Partners for Affordable Housing, and am honored to serve on the Oversight Committee. Community participation does not happen by chance. Most people will voluntarily participate if they can derive a benefit to themselves and their community. Communities and their beneficiaries must be actively involved in all of the stages of development for a policy or a project to be successful. Very often, however, Those who have been in government have designed policies and projects without the input from the communities that they are meant to help. By acting without input from the communities, from those that we wish to help, we have perpetuated white supremacy by assuming we know what communities of color need without making substantial efforts to engage with those communities and to work through the distrust that has been developed over decades. For the most part, people know what they need. We only have to ask with thoughtfulness and intentionality and then be quiet and listen to the answer. We have often tried to right the wrong of housing discrimination without acknowledging the long history of intentional and targeted actions towards communities of color. This makes engagement with disenfranchised communities, specifically communities of color, difficult for the city and other jurisdictions due to lack of trust, yet all the more critical that cities and jurisdictions do so in order to rebuild that trust. I am very honored to be a small part of a community process that has intentionally engaged with those who have been displaced from the northeast Portland due to gentrification and work with the city to develop a policy, the first of its kind in the nation, to prioritize the return of displaced persons. Northeast Portland was redlined for decades, and then, when our city needed room to grow, was targeted for improvement in the name of economic development, and the neighborhoods of people of color, specifically Black Portlanders, were intentionally and systematically displaced. We are not the only city to know this kind of targeted displacement, but we are the first to develop a way to bring people back. The benefits of the Northeast housing strategy are but a drop in the bucket compared to the harm that decades and decades of discriminatory policies and gentrification have caused. But the city of Portland is the only city to have such a policy in place, which for me is a source of great pride. We commend Mayor Wheeler and the City Council on its continued commitment to fair housing, to reaching out to those whose voices have long been either silenced or ignored. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler, and the City Council for continuing to work with community members to develop policies which remove the barriers to obtaining housing and prioritizing housing for those who have been most impacted by our harmful past policies. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the good work you and your colleagues are doing on the Northeast Housing Oversight Council. You guys are doing great work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, all three of you.
I'd like to invite back Alan Lazo. And I'll be bringing some chairs up here for the artists as well.
Thank you. So this is the most important part, right? This is where we hear the contest winners. Okay. Excellent. Thanks for being here.
It's all right, my young friends. That's how I looked and felt the first time I came here. That was only about 4 or 5 years ago. So you're way ahead of the game for that.
And he was shorter then.
And lighter, frankly. That's been a while. If you've heard me speak about this day before, you know that I always say it is my favorite day to come here, and I come here a lot. I come here a lot, and some days I'm talking about hate and harassment and discrimination. This is one of my favorite days because today we get to talk about love and inclusion and youthful optimism, frankly. So these are the award-winning artists from our poster contest this year from the Portland area. And so I am gonna, we'll put up on the screen the artwork that they had, and also I'm gonna read a real quick description of each of them, and just for a little bit of drama, we'll go from the bottom of this sheet that I have up. And so we may have to figure out whose poster is who. So the first one is Zella Ramirez, who is received third place in our grade 6 through 8 contest. She worked on this poster with her classmate Ursula DeCastro. So Zella is a sixth grader at the Ivy School here in Portland. She does acrobatics and enjoys photography. She owns ducks, chickens, and dogs. And this summer, Zella hopes to volunteer with the Humane Society and also will be doing some babysitting. So if you have needs, then.
And Zella's here?
Zella is on the far, right?
Zella.
Congratulations, and thank you for being here, Zella.
Babysitting needs, that sounds like a good opportunity.
It is. Maybe some grant money for that out there, huh?
There you go.
So Maya Riojas was our third place recipient for grades 1 through 3. Maya is 9 years old and is a third grader also at the Ivy School here in Portland. Her favorite sport is judo, and so I'm going to move away just to touch, not realize that. She likes to draw a lot and loves to read. She likes to do math in school and has a lot of good friends at school. She doesn't like writing that much. It'll come. Be patient. But she does it anyway and is getting better at it. When she grows up, she wants to be a scientist to stop pollution that hurts plants. One of her goals in life is to make people understand that when you use poison of any kind on plants, you are basically hurting yourself or killing yourself. So Maya, there's her, the poster that she worked on. And so congratulations, Maya.
This is Maya. Is that you? Yeah. That's great. So we know who you are, thank you.
All right. Good job.
All right, and the next job, one Maya. Down is Grace Vaupel, who was the first place recipient in grades 4 through 5. So Grace was excited to when she heard that she had won first place in grades 4 through 5. She's in the fifth grade, also at the Ivy School here in Portland. So quite a showing from our friends at the Ivy School. Her art teacher, Miss Sybil, is the best art teacher she has ever had and is the one who told Grace about the Fair Housing poster contest. A couple things you should know about Grace. She's pretty good at softball. I'm guessing that might that she'd be very good at softball. She knows almost everything about Harry Potter and can play the drums also pretty well. Her favorite animal is a corgi. My sister has 2 corgis. And she has 2 adorable dogs. Her favorite subject is either art or creative writing, and her favorite color is either black or blue. And you see the artwork here that Grace created. So thank you so much for being here, Grace, and congratulations. And of course, last but not least is our grand prize award recipient whose poster is printed on thousands of posters that will go throughout the state of Oregon. It is J.T. Franco. His full name. While I like J.T. better, his full name is Taylor Anacool Franco. He's a seventh grader, and we are so inclusive as an organization that we have included a Beaverton School District school in our Portland members because it's in that spot in Southwest Portland that is actually in the city of Portland. So JT is from Stoller Middle School in the SUMA program. His favorite subjects are math, media lab, and humanities. His other hobbies include reading, drumming, exploring computers, software and games, volunteering, swimming, and traveling. Oh, much like my own hobbies. So far, he's been to 6 countries and has made 16 trips to Thailand.
Wow.
Fantastic. When he grows up even more, he would like to be a computer engineer or programmer who goes on tour with a band as a professional drummer. That's, well.
Me too.
His favorite animals are dogs, and his favorite word is kindness. And you will see the art that will appear on posters throughout the state of Oregon on your screens now. JT, thank you so much for your lovely art, and congratulations again.
Thanks to all of you.
Thank you to all of you, to your teachers, and for your parents for being here today to celebrate Fair Housing Month with us. I think we're going to try and take some photos. And the young artists have signed some posters for you to put in your offices and
That's
keep
great.
Into
Sweet.
Perpetuity when some of them become famous and those become priceless.
Huh? Ellen, wait a minute. When you show up at City Council and you are televised on our network, you are famous. You're already,
already
famous.
So
you go.
The value of the posters have already gone up.
That's great. Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. And congratulations. And does that complete our presentation for the day? So why don't we go ahead and adjourn, and then we'll meet up here for some photographs with our award winners. We are adjourned.